Oh, what does old Tolstoy have in store for us today, I wonder? Welcome back to the Hemingway List. It's the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about Anna Karenina, Part 6, Chapter 29. Can anyone summarize this section of the book? Needed a summary because I lost interest. I am Norwegian said, are you calorie counting, Anna? Yes, I am. This is because yesterday I spoke about being on a diet. Yes, I am. Calorie counting. Just good old maths, you know. Just calories in, calories out. Keep it below a certain number and you'll lose a certain amount of weight per week. It's pretty easy, really. yeah, I am. Sorry, where was I? Are you calorie counting, Andrew? I spent the last 6 months out of the last year restricting my calories as much as possible to lose weight. Ended up losing a kilo each week for 6 months. Whoa, just about. So how many? That's like 20 kilos at least. Damn, well done. I loved iced coffee, which I had to give up. Luckily, cold brew is easy to make and tastes great. Funnily enough, it's only now that I've started calorie counting. Before, I just had to not eat. Now that I've started going to the gym, trying to rebuild myself into something, you know, not doughy, I need to worry about macros and stuff. It's nice, though, knowing that I have to eat a lot to fuel my progress guilt-free. Yeah, that's a whole different thing, isn't it? Gains, macros, all that. I'm just straight up trying to lose weight. I weighed 98 kilos at one point, and I'm not very tall. I'm only like 5'8", I think, 5'8", 5'9", something around there. And so 100 kilos basically is a lot. My doctor told me I'm obese, technically speaking, according to the charts, which is not cool. So, yeah, I want to get back down. I want to lose about 20 kilos myself. Just back to my normal body. But that it was always my normal body before I kind of turned 30-ish and went really fat. but I'm down. I'm down from 98. To about 92 now. So it's happening nicely. I also got a medication for my thyroid. I got a thyroid, hypothyroidism or whatever, and that's been helping me lose weight too because I've been meant to have been on that for the last 5 or 6 years, but I wasn't. Mostly because of my own neglect, laziness. So anyway, yep. Body's shaping up, losing a bit of fat. Very nice. Now, the iced coffee thing though. I loved iced coffee, which I had to give up. Luckily, cold brew is easy to make and tastes great. Now, it might be because of your macros and stuff, or it might be because of whatever, I don't know, lactose or something. But the iced coffee I make is only about 40 calories per glass. It's just a cup or a glass. You fill it with ice. So, you know, 4 or 5 ice blocks. Then you fill that with milk. So you've got about, I'm going to say about 200 mils of milk in the glass. So it's not a huge drink. 200-ish mils of milk, and then you make, essentially I just use instant coffee, mix it with a little bit of water, like maybe like, I don't know, two tablespoons of water, just enough to swirl up the coffee into a liquid. And then you pour that over the milk and let it sort of sink down into the milk. And that's it. It's just milk and coffee. And I use skim milk. So it's not many calories. I don't like it sweet. So I don't put any sugar in my iced coffee. I think that's kind of like, I don't know. I think that's gross. It's like a kid's drink. I don't think coffee needs sugar. I've been kind of, yeah, always been of that opinion. I mean, actually, I used to put a bit of sugar in it, but I don't think it should be like a sweet drink. Anyway. I think I'm probably in the minority there. And I know, oh, you're not American, are you? You're Norwegian, as per your name. I was going to say in America, they have their coffee. It's more sugar than anything else, with a little bit of coffee in there somewhere. And then about 8 different flavors. It'll be like coconut, white chocolate, Lamington, bloody caramel, salted caramel, whipped cream. And there's coffee too. It is a coffee, by the way. It's like, that's not a coffee. That's a dessert with some coffee in it. Anyway, yeah, iced coffee. Bloody delicious. Calorie counting is working. although I did... No, I think I kept under my calories today. I just ate a cheeseburger, but I didn't eat much else. Anyway, what were we talking about? Not that. That's pretty boring. Thanks for checking in about my calorie counting progress, though. That's nice of you. I'm Norwegian continues. Hey, Levin stumbled onto that guy that Levin met during the cleavage chapters. The dynamics are interesting. You have aristocrats, the real aristocrats, and you have political aristocrats, so progressive that they're essentially soaring the branch they're sitting on. If I remember correctly, Levin's buddy was a really conservative example of the former, not very happy with the way things were going. Levin, again, if I remember correctly, actually agreed with him quite a bit. I like that they discussed Vronsky's farming a bit, calling it a money sink, which is fair. It has proven to be anything more, hasn't proven to be anything more just yet. Swims of the Mama Fishy said, Chapter 25 also describes Vronsky's management of his estate. He might not be making money yet, but he is being prudent. Levin and his fellow landowner here in this chapter are scoffing at Vronsky's newfangled ways. I believe Vronsky is very sincere in his efforts, albeit they differ from Levin. Time will tell if his efforts bear fruit. Thermos of Beer said, boring. Yep. I wish something would happen. Levin and Vronsky fight a duel. Or Levin and Vronsky run off and start a new life together in a new world in Gary, Indiana. Or Anna Karenina has packed this place full of dynamite to take vengeance on all these nobles who have shunned her. But I'm sure it'll be more of this election instead. J Mama said, I like every one of these scenarios a million times more than what we're getting. Lexi says, Gary, Indiana, not Louisiana, Paris, France. What about New York or Rome? And 100% would prefer your stories. Yeah, I think we could mix all of that into one ending. Levin and Vronsky fight a duel. Okay, hear me out. Because of the election and their farm equipment. They have a huge farm equipment disagreement. All right? This farm equipment debate gets so heated that Levin and Vronsky, the only way they can settle it is with a duel. Right, so they do a duel. They both shoot. No, wait. Levin shoots. No, wait. Vronsky shoots first, narrowly missing Levin. Levin, he levels his game, his gun. He levels his gun at Vronsky and approaches and puts the gun right up to his face. But then he just lets it go. He doesn't pull the trigger. And instead, they kiss passionately in a surprise twist. And then Levin and Vronsky run off and start a new life together in Gary, Indiana. Meanwhile, Anna is so fed up with all this that she's packed the place full of dynamite to take vengeance on all of these nobles who have shunned her. And she blows up those nobles while Vronsky and Levin do a bit of Brokeback Mountain type stuff. What do you think? I think that's pretty good. Should we just wrap it up there? Well, there's only... Like, the ending's not going to be better than that. So should we just finish the book there and call it a day? Or, you know what, we'll read one more chapter just to see. Because that stuff might happen. What we just said, that might be what's about to happen. So let's just check. This is chapter 30. Sviatsky took Levin's arm and led him back to his own group. This time it was impossible to avoid Vronsky. He was standing with Oblonsky and Koznishev and looked straight at Levin as he came up. Very pleased. I think I had the pleasure of meeting you at the Princess Shcherbatsky's, said he, holding out his hand to Levin. Yes, I well remember our meeting, said Levin, and blushing scarlet immediately turned and spoke to his brother. Smiling slightly, Vronsky continued his conversation with Sviatsky, evidently having no desire to start a conversation with Levin, but Levin, while talking to his brother, kept looking round at Vronsky, trying to think of something to say to him in order to mitigate his rudeness. "What is delaying matters now?" asked Levin, glancing at Sviatsky and Vronsky. "Snetkov, he must either decline or accept," replied Sviatsky. "Well, and has he agreed or not?" "That's just it. Neither the one nor the other," answered Vronsky. "And if he should refuse, who will stand?" asked Levin, looking at Vronsky. "Whoever likes," replied Sviatsky. "Will you?" asked Levin. "Certainly not I," said Sviatsky, becoming embarrassed and casting an alarmed glance at the venomous gentleman who was standing beside Koznishev. "Who then?" "Nevedovsky," said Levin, feeling that he had put his foot in it somehow. But this was still worse. Nevedovsky and Sviatsky were the two prospective candidates. "Not I, not on any account," said the venomous gentleman. So this was Nevedovsky. Sviatsky introduced him to Levin. "Well, has it touched you to the quick?" said Oblonsky, winking at Vronsky. "It's like the races. It makes one inclined to bet on the result." "Yes, it does touch one to the quick," replied Vronsky. "And having once taken the matter up, one wants to carry it through. It's a struggle," he said, frowning, and closed his powerful jaw. "What a capable man Sviatsky is. How clearly he puts everything." "Oh, yes," replied Vronsky, absent-mindedly. There was a pause, during which Vronsky, since he had to look at something, looked at Levin, at his feet, his uniform, and then his face, and noticing the sombre eyes fixed upon him, he remarked, just to say something, "And how is it that you, living constantly in the country, are not a justice of the peace? You are not in the uniform of a justice, because I consider that the magistracy is an idiotic institution," morosely replied Levin, who had all the time been looking for an opportunity of speaking to Vronsky to atone for his rudeness at their first encounter. "I don't think so. On the contrary," said Vronsky with a calm surprise. "Oh, it's a game." That was me slapping myself in the face. "It's a game," Levin interrupted. "We don't need any justices of the peace. I have not had a single case in 8 years, and when I did have one, it was decided wrongly. The justice's court is 40 versts from my house. To settle a matter worth 2 rubles, I should have to send an attorney who costs me 15. And he related how a peasant stole some flour from a miller, and how the miller spoke to him about it. The peasant sued him for libel. All of this was untimely and foolish, and Levin himself was conscious of it even while he spoke. "Oh, he is such a crank," said Oblonsky, with the smoothest and most almondy smile. "But come, I think the ballot has begun." And they separated. "I don't understand," said Koznishev, who had observed his brother's awkward sally. "I don't understand how one can be so entirely devoid of political tact. That is what we Russians lack. The marshal of the province is our opponent, and you are ami cochon with him. You are quite thick with him. And ask him to stand. But Count Vronsky, I do not make a friend of him. He invited me to dinner, and I shan't go. But he is one of our party, so why make an enemy of him? Then you ask Nevodsky whether he will stand. That kind of thing is not done." "Oh, I understand nothing about it. It is all trifling," said Levin gloomily. "There, you say it is all trifling, but when you begin on it, you make a mess of everything." Levin remained silent, and they entered the large hall together. The marshal of the province, though he felt in the air that there was a plot prepared against him, and though he had not been unanimously asked to stand, he still decided to do so. There was silence in the hall, and the secretary loudly announced that Michael Stepanich Snetkov, the captain of the guards, was nominated for the post of provincial marshal, and that the ballot would now be taken. The district marshals cried, little plates filled with ballots from their own tables to the provincial table, and the election began. "Put it on the right," whispered Oblonsky to Levin, as the latter, with his brother, followed the marshal to the table. But Levin had forgotten the plan which had been explained to him, and was afraid that Oblonsky was making a mistake when he said, "Right." Surely Snetkov was their opponent. While approaching the box, he had the ball in his right hand, but thinking it was a mistake, he shifted to his left hand just as he reached the box, and evidently placed it to the left. As an expert standing beside the box, who by the mere motion of an elbow, could tell where every ball was put, and made a wry face. There was nothing for him to exercise his penetration upon this time. All became silent, and one heard the balls being counted. Then a solitary voice proclaimed the number for and against. The marshal had received a considerable majority. A clamour arose, and everyone rushed to the door. Snetkov entered. The noblemen thronged around him and with congratulations. "Well, is it over now?" Levin asked his brother. "It's only beginning," Sviatsky smilingly answered for Koznishev. "The other candidate may get still more votes." Levin had again forgotten about that. He only now remembered that there was some subtlety in it, but he was too bored to recollect what it was. He was overcome by depression and wanted to get out of that crowd. As no one was paying attention to him, and he apparently was not wanted by anyone, he went quietly to the small refreshment room and again felt great relief when he saw the waiters. Achoo! Oh, surprise sneeze. The old waiter offered him... Bless me. The old waiter offered him something to eat, and Levin accepted. Having eaten a cutlet and beans and talked with the old man about his former masters, Levin, not wishing to return to the hall where he had felt so out of his element, went up into the gallery. The gallery was crowded with smartly dressed women who leaned over the balustrade and tried not to miss a single word of what was being said below. Beside the women sat or stood elegant lawyers, spectacled high school teachers and officers. Everyone was talking about the elections and how tired out the marshal was and how interesting the debates had been. In one group, Levin heard them praising his brother. A lady was saying to the lawyer, "How glad I am to have heard Koznishev. It was worthwhile going a little hungry." "Delightful, so clear and audible. There now, no one speaks like that in your count, except perhaps Meidel, and even he is far less eloquent." Having found a vacant place at the balustrade, Levin leant over and began to look and listen. The noblemen were sitting behind partitions arranged according to their districts. In the centre of the room stood a man in uniform who announced in a loud, shrill voice, "As candidate for the post of the provincial marshal, Captain Eugene Ivanich Apukhtin will now be balloted for." Then followed a dead silence, and a feeble voice was heard saying, "Declines." "Court counsellor Peter Petrovich Bol will now be balloted for," cried the voice of the man in uniform. "Declines," shouted a youthful, squeaky voice. A similar announcement was made and again followed by declines. So it went on for about an hour, Levin leaning over the balustrade, looking on and listening. At first he was surprised and wanted to understand what it meant, then coming to the conclusion that he could not understand it, he grew bored. Then remembering the agitation and anger he had witnessed on all faces, he felt sad, and with the intention of leaving the place, went downstairs. As he was passing through the corridor behind the gallery, he came across a dispirited high school pupil with bloodshot eyes pacing up and down. On the stairs he met a couple, a lady running up swiftly in her high-heeled shoes, and the assistant public prosecutor. "I said you would be in time," the assistant said, as Levin stepped aside to let the lady pass. Levin was already descending the stairs to the exit and getting out his cloakroom ticket when the secretary caught him. "Please come, Konstantin Dmitrich. They are voting." The candidate who was standing was Nevodsky, who had so decidedly declined. Levin went up to the door of the hall. It was locked. The secretary knocked. The door opened and two landowners with flushing faces plunged out past Levin. "I can't stand it," cried one of the red-faced landowners. Then the head of the provincial marshal was thrust out at the doorway. His face was dreadful from its expression of exhaustion and fear. "I told you to let no one out," he shouted to the doorkeeper. "I was letting people in, Your Excellency." "Oh, Lord," said the marshal of the province with a deep sigh, and with his weary legs in the white trousers dragging and hanging his head, he went down the middle of the hall to the chief table. Nevodovsky and a majority, as they had expected, and was now marshal of the province. Many were cheerful, many contented and happy, many were in ecstasy, and many dissatisfied and miserable. The old marshal was in despair. He could not hide it. When Nevodovsky left the hall, the crowd surrounded him and followed him enthusiastically, as it had followed the governor of the province on the first day when he opened the meeting, and as it had followed Snetkov when he was successful. All right, there we go. Oh, something like a chapter complete. Was that a chapter of Anna Karenina or just a bunch of bullshit. Oh, by the way, speaking of a bunch of bullshit, I finished another chapter today of Bogan War and Peace, book 2, chapter 1. So I did a couple of other chapters from book 2 previously. So I think I've done 4 out of that book. I don't know why I didn't start at chapter 1. I did a few random ones, but now I've gone back to chapter 1. I'll work my way through it. But yeah, another chapter done. It was kind of fun. A few laughs. I made myself chuckle, which is always the best thing ever. And it just made me remember that I should remind you guys that book 1 of Bogan War and Peace is available now via anderlewis.com, A-N-D-E-R-L-O-U-I-S, or you can find it on Amazon or your Kindle device, or you can buy a paperback via Amazon as well. Bogan War and Peace, look it up, you'll get a good laugh, I promise you that. Yeah, thanks for listening today. That's it. Yes, that's it. Cool. I'll see you tomorrow.